Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. We shall continue from where we stopped. So today is the 29th October 2020. It's a Thursday. Today is public holiday. I think it's Prophet Muhammad's birthday. We will continue with the Heart Sutta version 2. We are at page 257, Appendix 7. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. Then we will, as usual, have our half an hour awareness-based meditation. I will off the light. Then we will get ready for meditation. I will also set the alarm for 30 minutes. So you just relax, maintain awareness, stabilize the awareness. Don't try to know, don't do anything. If you want to use whatever skillful means, method or technique to decondition your heedless thinking or develop the spiritual faculty, or do whatever training that you are familiar with to stabilize your mindfulness, you can go ahead to do it too. Otherwise, the fastest way is just relax body and mind, completely relax, at ease. Don't try to know anything. Don't try to do anything. Just silent and maintain awareness. Whatever arise, let it arise. Thought arise, let it arise. Everything will come to pass. They will arise and cease. Arise and cease. Then when you are quiet, maintain awareness, you can actually understand many things. And we are all human beings. Even living being is the same. We have a physical body. We have a consciousness trapped inside. So because this consciousness is trapped inside, it will have the ability to become conscious. Conscious of whatever that arises at the sense experience. If you are in a formal meditation, whether sitting or lying down, or whatever stable posture you may have, like you lean against a chair or a wall, you just silent everything. Then when you silent everything, the tactile consciousness will be the most prominent. When you are completely silent, when your mindfulness become more stable, you can be aware of anything. You can be aware of contact between your body with the floor or with whatever cushion or whatever. Then there is also tactile between your bodily parts. If you put your hand in front of your lap, there is a sensation there. Then if you have mindfulness developed, spiritual faculty developed, you settle down very fast, then you can be aware of many things. Wherever you locate your mind, the awareness will pick it up. So for those who are sensitive, you can detect your heartbeat or any vibration within your heart area. You just stay there. Stay there. Be with it until that thing becomes very quiet and very still. Then sometimes when you hear something, aware, finish. Smell something, aware, finish. Even that taste, the saliva or whatever. Aware, finish. Then whatever thought process or memory, when they arise, aware, finish. Don't follow, don't continue. Just maintain awareness. Aware, aware, aware. If you do that, it will finally bring you back to the understanding that the form and mind, they are dependent originating. Upon contact, many things happen. So contact of consciousness or the mundane mind if the senses will trigger off the respective sense of consciousness. Observe this, understand this. Don't try to know. Just aware, and you will understand. Don't try to know. Just stabilize awareness. And as you continue to do this, if you are patient, your thinking will slow down. Your whatever mundane activity, sankhara, will slow down. Then the mind will return to its original state before the stirring, before thought arise. It will become very quiet, very still, and very tranquil. But this one, if you are new, if your spiritual faculty are not developed, it's not so easy, not so fast. It takes some time. So be patient. Just maintain awareness. Relax, silent, maintain awareness. Then wait for the thing to happen. Whatever that I describe, the thinking slow down. Wait for it to happen. Develop the awareness of it and understand it in the meditation, not as a knowledge. Don't allow the thought to arise to go and look for it and say, oh, this is what Brother Teo said. Forget about it. The awareness will understand all this. Then later on, you will also understand what I mean. So just let things be, maintain awareness, and let everything slow down and return to its original state of tranquility and stillness. Then just stay there. Maintain the awareness. Then when you are one with the phenomena in the state of awareness, there is only that clarity of mind that is just aware, without words, without concept, without the arising of anything. Just that nature, the essence of mind, that true nature, the awareness nature. Just stay with that. You know, that is the true mind, the meditative mind, your true nature. When you stabilize that, you can understand many things. Well, that one is the direct seeing. That one can insight into phenomena, can observe. That is the silent mind that is capable of choiceless awareness, that can observe what happened, the reality within the moment, what is. It can see things as they are, and that is the mind that you have to realize and stabilize. That is the T actually. But need stability. Otherwise it moves very fast. And then it arises thought, thinking very fast. Just aware, finish, aware, finish. Until this nature becomes very stable, very quiet. Then you will experience many, many things that the book never writes. Only the cultivator, the meditator can understand, and you are capable of many things. Because this true mind, the silent mind, is awareness, wisdom energy. It's not a thought-based energy. It is a totally different, very fine, still vibration. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner calmness, inner awareness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed, and the stability of mindfulness, the silent mind. Maintain them for as long as you can. Then remember to develop the daily mindfulness, the daily religious routine to stabilize your mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. Unless you are heedful throughout the day, your meditation cannot really take off. The real meditation only starts after you have developed the stability of mindfulness, especially the daily mindfulness. You need to be ever mindful, constantly meditative throughout the day. So to be heedful, there are two parts. First part is to be ever mindful. Then use it to meditate constantly meditating. To be ever mindful, we need to train the mind to develop the ability to be aware, to be mindful, then stabilize it until it's very, very stable, so that you understand clearly what that silent mind is, what that true mind is, that nature within, apart from thought, apart from the mundane mind, there is another mind that you need to realize. That is the mind that can meditate, that is the mind that can understand, that can insight into phenomena, that can awaken, that can see things as they are, that has that nature's pure energy, wisdom energy to awaken. We will continue with our sharing. Turn to page 250 of our Heart Sutta, version 2, appendix 7. This appendix 7 is very unique. It's a very beautiful Dhammapada saying. The title is The House Builder. So Dhammapada 153 and 154 involve the house builder. So this one is the famous saying of the Buddha, yeah? After he has become fully enlightened, then he recited this Dhammapada saying. So this one is regarding the form and mind, the human being or the living being. How do we take birth? How did birth occur, leading to samsara? The endless, continuous, countless birth and death, conditioned by karma, conditioned by craving, caused by ignorance. So this so-called house builder means that thing that give rise to rebirth or constant endless birth leading to existent life. How does it come about? So the Buddha, through many, many lives of cultivation and perfection, finally came to realize that deep, profound truth. That's why he started by saying, under Dhammapada verse 153 and 154, he said, seeking but not finding the house builder, I traveled through many rounds of countless birth. So here, the I refers to the form and mind, the segmented life. Every life when we take birth, as a human being or as a living being, sometimes as animals, sometimes as devas, non-humans, brahmas, or whatever within the 31 planes of existence. So every of this birth is a one segment of your life. But since living beings have countless births over the eons and eons and eons of birth and death, then the question is, which one is you? None of them are you. But the more important question that the Buddha wants to unravel is, how did this birth and death continue? Who actually is the builder of this house that houses our consciousness? The form and mind is like a dwelling, a house that houses the consciousness that comes with rebirth. So who is the one that built this house? Because the body that we live in is like our house, it houses our consciousness. So seeking but not finding the house builder, the Bodhisattva, through all the countless segmented lives, he traveled through many rounds of countless birth. Then he said, oh, painful is birth, ever again and again. This means repeated birth leading to endless suffering or dukkha. Then there is three columns on the table. You look at it. Column one on the right is what Dhammapada verse one. On the left is what Dhammapada verse 153 and 154 is. You have to read it vertically down. Then the detailed explanation is on the center column, where I put in the notes to explain the equivalent sentence of the Dhammapada verse. Then the next column is the essential Dhamma and the important notes that are related to these sections of the cultivation. So seeking but not finding the house builder, I travel through many rounds of countless birth. Here it means the Bodhisattva then had cultivated through countless lifetimes in search for this house builder. Means how did the segmented line form in mind come into being? Who is the one that built this? So he used the word house builder is because every segmented line we come, we have a consciousness that is trapped inside this segmented body. So he said, it's like a house that houses your consciousness. So seeking but not finding this house builder, the Bodhisattva has traveled to many, many rounds of countless birth. Then he said, oh, painful is birth ever again and again. Then after that, finally, he said, house builder, you have now been seen, means he know what that house builder is, who that house builder is. So house means our five aggregates of form and mind, the segmented life. That five aggregate of form and mind is the Buddha's way of breaking down the living being. For our case, it's a human being. We have a physical body, then we have a consciousness trapped inside. So the physical body is the form, the physical form, the aspect of the five aggregate. Then we have the consciousness which the Buddha subdivided into four more mind aggregates. Now this consciousness is mainly mind, mundane mind. Of course there is a true mind, but that one is connected to the five aggregate. It's different from the five aggregate. That true mind is the nature within, the oneness nature, the unconditioned. So that one is nothing to do with this five aggregate of form and mind. The mind, if you want to understand the other four aggregates that the Buddha subdivide, you need to inquire deep. What can your mind do? Then you will understand this four more aggregates of mind that the Buddha has subdivided it into. The Buddha said, this consciousness that is trapped inside, it can give rise to feeling. It has this ability to feel pleasant or unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling could be painful feeling and all those things, the sensations. So that part is an aggregate because it has that ability to feel. Then what else can our mundane mind do? Our thinking mind do? It can also perceive. That's why the second aggregate of mind is perception, sanya in Pali. Feeling is vedana in Pali. So vedana and sanya are the two mental aggregates that the Buddha subdivided the mind into. Because our mind is capable of perception. We can perceive what we see, the external color, shape, and form. And we can perceive what we hear, the sound, the vibration, everything. We can also perceive what we smell, what we taste, what we tactilely feel and think. So the power of mind to perceive the external form is a quality of mind. That's why he subdivided it into perception. So we have two, feeling and perception, Vedana and Sanya. Then what else can our mind do? Our mind is capable of thinking, creating mental activity, mental intention, mental states, mental formation. The Buddha called it Sankara. Sankara is a very complete word for the content of consciousness. Whatever that your mind can do is Sankara. It includes all of our mental activity. That's why we have to use four or five English equivalent words to describe Sankara, the content of consciousness. Mental activity is one of them. Mental states is the other one. Mental formation is the other one. Then we have mental intention is another one. Then we also have all the planning, scheming, whatever, cunningness, these are all under mental states. Selfishness, calm mind state, tranquility of mind state, stillness of mind. All these are mental states. There are 52 mental states. And they include feeling and perception. So feeling, perception, and Sankara, they are actually under one category. So if you separate out feeling and perception, then the balance of Sankara that is under the third category that the Buddha described have 52 mind states. Yeah. So that one we already went through. And finally, what else can your mind do? Our mind can also become conscious. Conscious of what we see, conscious of what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactilely feel and think, the sixth sense. So consciousness is a very important aspect of mind. That's why the phenomenal world is a phenomenal world of consciousness. We are through our senses, upon contact of mind with the senses, it can give rise to the respective consciousness. So in Pali, it's called Vijnana. That's why the fourth aggregate of mind is Vijnana. So we have the four. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. So these four aggregates of mind, combined with the physical body, become the five aggregate of form and mind. And this is the first aspect as a human being. As a human being. Then as we all know, every moment of sense experience upon contact of mind with the senses, sense base and the respective sense data, it triggers off the respective sense of consciousness. So the consciousness that arises initially is without its content, like the Buddha said. In the seeing is just the pure seeing, the seeing consciousness, like the physical experiment. It just trigger off. Upon contact, the light bulb lights up. The lighting up is like the mind become conscious. Depending on what that sense door is. If that light bulb is the eye, E-Y-E, then the lighting up becomes the seeing consciousness. If the light bulb is the ear, E-A-R, then it becomes the hearing consciousness, the lighting up. You're conscious of what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactilely feel and think, thought consciousness. So this is how the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind arise. So according to the Buddha, is it every moment of sense or experience at the moment of contact between consciousness and the sense basis and the sense data, it will trigger off the respective sense or consciousness. Then after that, through ignorant delusion, the form and mind introduces the content of consciousness into that pure consciousness. This content includes your feeling, your contact, your perception, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, everything went in. All of the content of consciousness go in. And when it go in, it has initially the four aggregate of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. Then how did the fifth aggregate went in? Here, the fifth aggregate is the form aggregate, the external form. So the mind has the aggregate of perception which brings the external form into the mind. Whatever you come to perceive, like your seeing consciousness, you perceive a car, a human being, or the Buddha image, that is the external form you bring into mind. So the four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana, together with the external form, becomes the five aggregate of form and mind. That's like every moment of sense or consciousness, there is the mental five aggregate of form and mind. And that is the second aspect, which very few people understand. And that is the one that the Buddha refers to under the 12-link teaching or Paticca Samuppada teaching, the law of dependent origination. So under the 12-link, the first two link is avijja paccaya sankhara, then sankhara paccaya vijnana. Vijnana is the pure consciousness. Then when you input the content, it becomes vijnana paccaya nama rupa. That is the five aggregate of form and mind. The nama and the rupa, the form and the mind. That is the upadana khandas, the grasping aggregate before you become enlightened. So this is where the teaching comes in. So this house builder, the house, is the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects. You want to understand more? Go back to our initial first and second chapter. It's described very clearly in detail in the text. This Heart Sutta text, we have already gone through. Then builder, the builder that built house, that refers to craving, that condition becoming. So this craving, that condition becoming, and birth, which propel living beings to tumble through samsara, is the endless birth and death. Samsara is the wheel of life, the wheel of insistent birth and death. If you are not able to escape through wisdom, through awakening, enlightenment, then samsara is like eternity, unending. So this very important understanding of the house builder as craving is described by the Buddha very clearly in his teaching. He said, due to ignorant avijja, craving arises. And craving is the builder. Without ignorant that condition, craving, there is no rebirth. So this part, he realized. He said, house builder, you have been seen. How does the Buddha came to have the ability to see the house builder? under the center explanation is via the direct seeing of its dependent originating or condition arising nature. This is how you insight into phenomena. The direct seeing to awaken to the three universal characteristics of impermanent, anicchang, dukkha, suffering state, and anatta, non-self or empty nature of existence. So this direct seeing, you need the silent mind. You need your true mind, your awareness nature to do it. The mundane mind cannot do it. The ordinary thinking mind cannot do it. That's why meditation is about realizing the silent mind, the true mind, your true nature. Then the Dhammapada verse continue. You shall not build the house again. Means the Buddha has realized the truth. He has awakened. Because he has awakened, he has the wisdom to cease and root out ignorance. That's why there is no more delusion, no more ignorance to condition craving. So craving will not condition future rebirth since it has been completely rooted out or abandoned. So this understanding is very important. Then he moved on. The Buddha explained under the other Dhammapada verse. He said, thy rafter has been broken down. So what is a rafter? If you are a contractor or a house builder or architect, you will know. Yeah? You need to build the roof, isn't it? Yeah. On the top ridge, there is what they call a ridge pole that hold all the rafter together. The rafter are the slanting main supporter or main bearer. They are called rafter. Yeah. So your rafter has been broken down. So here rafter means your mental defilements, your mental kilesa. Yeah. So these are what they call the negativity of mind state with the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So your rafter has been broken to what? Via perfection of virtue and purification of mind to arise the appropriate right thought, right speech, and right action which are free of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then after that he continued, your ridge pole. So that ridge pole that hold the rafter together on the top, the apex there, that one denote ignorance or avijja, the first of the 12 links. Well, that is the one that started everything. And that ridge pole is the one that hold on all the rafter, the defilement. Without the ridge pole, the rafter collapse. There is nothing to hold. So that one is like ignorant up there. So that ridge pole refer to ignorant, avijja, the first of the 12 links, is demolished too. Via perfection of wisdom, completely rooting out ignorance. Then the Buddha said, my mind has now attained the unformed, the unconditioned nirvana. Then he continued, and reached the end of every kind of craving, you shall build no more house. That's how the Buddha actually realized enlightenment. So here he said the mind has now attained the unformed or the unconditioned. It means realization of Nibbana, cessation of form and mind, leading to the end of all suffering. So this is how the meditative wisdom as taught by the Buddha can give rise to enlightenment in the here and now, awakening to end birth and death, so that you don't have to come back again in the form of constant rebirth or karmic conditioning. Then down there is a note. The ridgepole is the top main support for the roof truss or rafters. And the rafters are the bearer beam, sub main support, spanning from the ridgepole to the base plate of the roof truss, needed to support the batten which are needed to hold on to the roof tile, etc. This one is just to explain it more clearly to people who are not in the construction industry or not in the housing industry. So after we have understood the deep meaning of this Dhammapada verse 153 and 154, we will turn on to the third column to develop the deeper understanding. So column one is vertical column, Dhammapada verse 153 and 154. Then the explanation I have already gone through. Then now the last one is the related essential Dhamma and notes. So the first verse, seeking but not finding the house builder, I travel through many rounds of countless birth. Oh, painful is birth ever again and again. House builder, you have been seen. You shall build no more house. You shall not build the house again. So this few section of the first, what they call Dhammapada verse, the essential Dhammas are the four number two, the five aggregates of form and mind. Just now I've already explained the two aspects. Then the Paticca Samuppada, I've already also explained the first four link. Then the three evil roots is also part of that Kalesa, or what they call mental defilements. Then you also need to understand the law of karma, the five spiritual faculty, and the five mental hindrance. So after that, we move on to the next verse. Your rafter has been broken down. Your ridgepole is demolished too. My mind has now attained to the unconditioned or unformed, which is Nibbana, and reach the end of all kind of craving. So the essential Dhamma that is related to this is you have to make aspiration to root out ignorance and defilement. So to do that, you have to do your puja and aspiration. Then you also have to cultivate, develop the religious routine. Then stabilize your daily mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. Then there is another part. Also in our puja and aspiration, we can develop all this understanding. Then how do we do it? We have to strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. That's why your daily mindfulness, you must stabilize them. Then you must continuously cultivate, develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Means strive on with heedfulness to attain the enlightenment path and fruition soon as possible. To diligently cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, which is Noble Eightfold Path, leading to the ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. So these are the understanding and the cultivation that are related. So if you cannot train your mind to have the stability of mindfulness leading to the mind that is ever mindful and constantly meditating, means constantly cultivating sila, samadhi, and panya or Noble Eightfold Path, leading to the enlightenment in the here and the now, ultimate liberation and born free nibbana. So this is how this Dhammapada verse 153 and 154 can be understood. And the explanation is very clear. The meaning is very deep. And hopefully with this table, it can guide you along, yes, to develop the understanding. In fact, this particular Dhammapada verse is very famous. It has been chanted many times by Buddhists all over the world. And this Dhammapada verse, a lot of enlightened being or cultivator who have realized the enlightenment, they have a lot of joy when they recite this, because this is exactly what happened after you have awakened. The understanding is you have realized the enlightenment through realizing the wisdom to root out ignorant avijja, the house builder, that condition craving. And because of ignorance, there is craving. And when craving has been rooted out, there is no more rebirth. That's how you become enlightened, awakened. Then the realization came from a very profound understanding that the five aggregates of form and mind, our karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world, the segmented life, and that one is subject to karma, law of karma. That one is not real. That one is impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. That one is subject to suffering. And that one is impermanent. And because it's impermanent, it is empty, non-self, not what you think. So when you deludedly grasp and cling, there is self-delusion, there is ignorance. That's why you suffer. But when you realize its true characteristic, its true nature, which is within the conditioned world, the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, means they are dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, hold on to, grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. When you break that delusion, you awaken. You straight away free. And the reason why the Buddha to be, the Bodhisattva, in his last life as Sakyamuni, or Siddhartha Gautama, before he becomes Sakyamuni Buddha, he left the palace to seek for truth. The reason why he left is because he saw the four signs. He realized he cannot have the answer to old age, sickness and death. He need to seek an answer to old age, sickness and death. And that was based on his delusion or ignorance, thinking that that segmented line, the five aggregate of form and mind, is real, is what he is. That's why he said, finally, everything that he was able to have, despite what the father has given him, he was a prince. But all this happiness and joy that he had is of no meaning when finally he realized he has this problem. He will grow old, he will get sick, become very fragile, weak, and finally die. Then he realized that that is not life. He has a problem now. So he need to seek an answer to overcome old age, sickness and death. And when he meditate, when he inherited his perfection from the past, spiritual nature, when he connect to the gateway, then he came to realize that profound wisdom that this segmented line, the fiery or formal mind, is not real, not what he is. That's how he awakened. That's why he realized it is due to ignorance, that condition craving that bring forth the delusion. And because of that, he grabs and cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that is what he is. And through that grasping, he suffered. He developed the problem. Then when he meditated and awakened, he realized he has a nature which is the unconditioned, the eternal life, which was never born. And because it was never born, that nature was never old, never get sick, and never die. So when he realized the unconditioned, he was able to have that penetrating wisdom to transform. Then that form and mind, that segmented line, the last segmented line, Siddhartha Gautama, through that wisdom connected, he is no longer deluded. Ignorant already rooted out. That's why there is no more craving to condition rebirth. That's how he realized the unconditioned. And this is basically what Dhammapada was 153 and 154 is. And this topic is not easy to comprehend unless you have really awakened. For normal people, it's more or less at knowledge level, maybe Dhamma knowledge. But to really comprehend the unconditioned, you must go through cessation of form and mind, realize Nibbana, the unconditioned, unless you realize that there is no way you can understand all this. So with this, I think we will end this Appendix 7. I think we are fast finishing this Heart Sutta version 2 book. The next topic is the Avijja Sutta, Appendix 8. After that, we will have the last appendix, which is Appendix 9. So I believe next Tuesday will be our last sharing on Heart Sutta, and we will have this time completed the Heart Sutta in a very beautiful way, because we spend more time this time instead of every retreat, annual retreat, I have to rush through it within the 8 or 9 days. So now we have almost, I think we started in March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 months. So it took us 7 months to completely go through the whole of this Heart Sutta in a very detailed manner. And these are all very beautiful sharing, very important sharing with a lot of understanding and pointers. And since they are recorded, some are properly they make it into short videos, which are very useful. Then the full version of the audio file and the video file, they are also in our website. You go to brothertheo.com, you can find them. So these are very important, essential Dhamma, the teaching that you need for you to cultivate, to develop the understanding and the awakening, the realization of the enlightenment in the here and the now. So now we move on to Appendix 8, the Avijja Sutta. This Avijja Sutta is also another very beautiful sutta spoken by the Buddha. As you all understand, avijja means ignorance. So there is a sutta on ignorance. So this Avijja Sutta, there are two cycles to it. One is the enlightenment cycle, And the other one is the ignorant cycle. The ignorant cycle is how you fall. The enlightenment cycle is how you rise and become enlightened. This sutta is very complete and a very good guide for cultivation. If you don't understand this sutta, you don't follow this sutta's guidance, chances is you are not doing it correctly. Because most people don't have a clear picture of the Buddha's teaching, complete teaching. And they took all the essential Dhamma like separate teaching. Then some emphasize on this essential Dhamma, some emphasize on that essential Dhamma, and they fail to link them all together. And they don't know how to sequence them to develop the cultivation. This Avijja Sutta spell out very clearly how all this cultivation is to be developed and cultivated. If you follow this Avijja Sutta, you will never go wrong and you will really progress. Yeah. Without the Avijja Sutta, you cannot understand how you fall and how you rise. So now I will read it to you. This Avijja Sutta explains clearly the importance of having true noble friends or Dhamma friends as Kayanamitas. So mitas are friends. Kayana means Dhamma friends. Kayanamitas. So Dhamma friends are friends that walk the path of Dhamma to realize the enlightenment in the here and the now, based on the Buddhist teaching as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. So this Avijja Sutta, I think there is a Nikaya, Angurunik, I don't know how to pronounce, is the middle length, I think. I forgot already. There are three Nikayas, I think. They have the Sanyutta Nikaya, the short discourse, I think. Amajika Nikaya is a longer one. Then the last one, I think, is now that is the long discourse, I think. So this AN, I don't know whether it's that Nikaya or not, 10.61, anyway. I think it's from the internet, it should be correct. This Avijja Sutta explains clearly the importance of having true Dhamma friends. So Dhamma friends got two types. One is ordinary Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma, means they have not awakened. They are still cultivating. The other type of Dhamma friends, they call it noble friends. Noble friends are Dhamma friends who has developed the cultivation very well and awakened and has the Dhamma. That's why they are called noble ones, enlightened ones, true noble friends. So this Avijja Sutta explains clearly the importance of having true noble friends as Kayanamitas to realize enlightenment. According to the Buddha, having noble friends as our Kayanamita or Dhamma friend is one of the prerequisites to become an Arya or an enlightened being. So this is the first requirement. You must have noble friends. Otherwise, not easy. Almost impossible to become enlightened. So this prerequisite is very important. That's why I form our group as Kayanamitas. That is the understanding that I had before I came out, before I made the decision to come out to share. That's why I don't want to create a title or a grouping or a segregation to divide the Buddhist community further. That's why I choose this word, Kayanamitas, Dhamma friends. So we are all Dhamma friends. We walk the path of Dhamma, we share the Dhamma, then we cultivate together as Dhamma friends. We support each other then we also develop all the faith, the spiritual faculty, the understanding, so that we can actually be a blessing to all. We can also help others. Then we can help set good example to motivate others. So Dharma friends, you can really play your role and help out in a big way. Then this weekend, this Saturday, which is 2 more days away, will be our gathering of Kayamita come my birthday celebration. This, in fact, for those who may not understand, who are new, is an annual occasion since the year 2004, I think about November or December, when I started to come out to share the Dhamma upon the request of our sister Hui Yun Chan. So Yun Chan was the first person who really came to me and request me to come out to share on 3 occasions. So all those were history now. So since the year 2004 until now, the year 2020 is 16 years ago. So this year is the 16th anniversary of our gathering of Kayamita come my birthday. So it originally started in the year 2004, because after I did the sharing, they find it so beautiful, so meaningful. Then they want to like express their gratitude and thanks towards me. Then they came to know my birthday, end of the year, October 31st. This year is exactly on that day. So quite a lot of sincere Kayamita met up with me and proposed to me to celebrate my birthday. And I'm a person, for one, who doesn't like to celebrate birthday, because my birthday always fall in the October month, which is always exam time. Last time, Form 3, Form 5, Form 6, the exam is always towards the end of the year. Then when I went to the university, it's also quite a quiet occasion, because I don't really celebrate. And my parents also, all the brothers and sisters, the children, we never celebrate. We never have a formal one. But after they got married, I think on their own, their family, they did. But as kids and students, we never. Then even our parents, we seldom celebrate their birthday, because we also don't know when is their birthday. So all this to us was quite an affair. Then being humble, I told them no need. But they said, no, brother, we want to express our gratitude. We want to express our thank, sincere thank and all those things, because we appreciate what you have shared with us. And that gratitude, that respect, we need to repay. So I told them, okay, if there is a case, why not we do it this way? I said, we have it as an annual occasion, the gathering of Kayamita, where it can at the same time give rise to goodness, to wholesomeness. Then why not? So I agreed to it was because of that. So I said, let's make the priority as gathering of Kayamita. Once a year we meet, because when I came out to share, I share at many places. Like now, you still have the Tuesday class, Thursday class, Sunday class. They are all 3 different places. Then sometimes I give talk at various monastery temple. So I have Kayamita almost everywhere. And sometimes the Tuesday class never go to Thursday class. Thursday class never come to Sunday or Tuesday class. So most of them in the early years, they may not know each other. So I say, why not the gathering of Kayamita, we invite all and get them all to meet, so that we can introduce them to each other and have a big Kayamita family. So that's how all this become possible. So because of that, I said we will have gathering of Kayamita and have fellowship. Then at the same time we can have dinner or lunch. And it's like an occasion for joy. You can celebrate, you can express your gratitude, your appreciation, then express the whatever expression of thanks and all those things to me or to Kayamita or to my wife and other Kayamita. You can do it. That's why it has been that historical understanding to have this type of annual gathering of Kayamita. And normally it's quite a grand occasion, which is quite fun. And we also normally provide subsidized lunch or dinner. Via our Kayamita, we have enough fund to actually subsidize. We understand not everybody can afford that type of budget. So we try to reduce cost. So this year we're supposed to have, we also supposed to have it on the 31st of October. We already booked the restaurant, but because of CMCO, somehow the condition is such we need to cancel that lunch gathering. Then Tamasuri and a few others, I think they have good intention. They came and talked to me, why not we do a Zoom? That's why this Saturday we will have a Zoom. We still continue with the tradition. This year is the 16th anniversary, so we will use the Zoom to do it. So Zoom video conference will be the replacement of the actual physical gathering. This is to prevent unnecessary violation of the CMCO Act and all those things. And since today I am sharing all this with you, on that day my speech will be very short. I don't have to repeat all this thing. So the occasion for this gathering of Kayamita come birthday celebration is to have fellowship among everybody so that we can introduce each other. So this year I was told the Zoom, you all can sing the birthday song together. Everybody on the Zoom, you can log in and then we can have our joy and sharing and occasion. Then after that, I will deliver a very short speech. Then after that, I think they will have this what they call expression of gratitude, appreciation, thanked by all the Kayamita, not only to me, to everybody. Because this is fellowship, you're supposed to get to know each other, then you're supposed to express your gratitude towards everybody who has helped you in one way or another. Then Kayamita, because we are Dhamma friends, we have this sincerity, we have this beautiful attribute, which is all in the website, you can read about it. Then we are here to motivate, to actually help each other in whatever way, to walk the path of Dhamma sincerely. Then to counsel, and also to help in whatever way. So all these are very wholesome and it can be very beneficial. So when you have good Dhamma friends, you can keep yourself updated. Then you can share your experience. You can share with each other how you develop the understanding of the Dhamma, the cultivation, and how you started, and who introduced you, who helped you, and how you have developed the understanding to transform your life, to bring forth the joy, the happiness, and now you can play back your role. In return, you can help others, be a blessing to others. So all these are very beautiful, very meaningful. Then how it had transformed your understanding of life and leading to your faith in the teaching, and how you diligently and diligently cultivate and persevere to develop the understanding and transformation, and how it has changed your life, improved your life for the better. Then all this sharing and expression of gratitude and appreciation of kindness and whatever that you have received is very meaningful, a lot of Dhamma joy. Then when you make offering, you also have a lot of joy. Then you get to have fellowship. But this year, maybe you have to do your own preparation of puja and food at your own house or residence, because we cannot have this gathering. So it's a bit different. But no problem, because these are simple things that we can do. Yeah, everybody also need to have breakfast. So maybe you wake up early, prepare yourself, get ready the breakfast and all this thing. Then use your breakfast as offering. Then light some candle, then make your altar bright. Then develop the joy and log in the Zoom. Then when the Zoom starts, you can actually get to experience a different format of gathering of Kriyamita Gambade celebration. So this is the part that I need to explain to people who are new, who may not understand this tradition. So it's like what I used to say, it's not so much of my birthday, because I give very little significance to my birthday. Your birthday is just another day. So of course, everybody is very interested in having their own birthday celebrated by loved ones and all those things. But now with the WhatsApp, I think it has transformed the way we receive birthday wishes. In the olden days, seldom people remember your birthday. Sometimes it's just classmate or whatever, but only a few. But nowadays, the whole WhatsApp group, the Facebook, everything, people come to know. Then the amount of wishes that come in is really overwhelming. Even our university graduate website classmate, we have a class of 200 something. That one also a lot of people wish. Then my Alastair schoolmates also, since primary school, standard one until form six. So they also have a WhatsApp group. Then we also have our My Kriyamita WhatsApp group. So during this occasion, there is a lot of sincere, beautiful wishes. So it's so different nowadays. You can have a lot of joy. And I can recall a lot of these classmates or university mates, when they finally located him and first time put their name in, then the first time they experienced their birthday with so much greetings, they were really filled with joy, a lot of joy, and they expressed their thank profusely. He said, for the first time I received so much birthday greeting, and what they call birthday greetings and good sayings, blessing and all those things from close friend, schoolmate, uni mate, and also various type of relationship that you have with other people. So this type of tradition has actually changed the world. So you are no longer so lonely, actually. But provided you have Dhamma friends, Facebook friends, and also WhatsApp group, to actually give rise to such condition. Yeah? But I think most of us have. Huh? So this is the part that I would like to share. Huh? And okay, now we go back to the notes. Huh? So this Avijja Sutta, I will go through it quickly. Yeah? Well, we got 7 more minutes on it. Yeah? So hopefully I can finish it off. Otherwise, I will keep for next session. Yeah? Because Appendix 9 is also quite short. Yeah? The three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, the three phases of the Dhamma which I have gone through. So okay, I will try to finish up the enlightenment sequence. This ignorance sequence, you have to actually understand the enlightenment sequence before you can understand the ignorance sequence. But the ignorance sequence is actually very beautiful. It's very accurate. So what is spoken by the Buddha is, maybe I go through first, then after that I explain. See, the ignorance sequence, according to the Buddha, is it, the nutriment for avijja is the 5 mental hindrance, pancha nivaranas. So these 5 mental hindrance, without avijja, they are not there. And they are there because you lack the opposite 5 spiritual faculty. That's why without the spiritual faculty, you cannot understand spiritual teaching. You cannot root out avijja, ignorance. So the first sequence is you have avijja, ignorance. And the new treatment for this is the 5 mental hindrance. That's why once you have the ignorance, the 5 mental hindrance will come in because you lack the spiritual faculty. And when the 5 mental hindrance come in, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot meditate. Now you understand, huh? Then the nutriment for this 5 mental hindrance is the 3 way of bad conduct. Because of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, this 3 way of bad conduct feed the mental hindrance. Then the nutriment for this 3 way of bad conduct is you are unrestrained in the sense faculty. Means every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactically feel something, or recall or think of something, you don't have sense restraint. Where you don't have the initial wisdom, yoniso manasika, you don't have the understanding. Then you react to sense experience, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. These are all mental hindrances. Then this is the one that condition you into habitual tendency. And this habitual tendency becomes so intense, that's why you no need to do anything. Every moment of sense experience, you just react. You just stir your mind, react to sense experience, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. That's how your suffering comes to be. So from like and dislike, it develops sorrow and lamentation, envy, jealousy, all this negativity or mind states. So the lack of sense restraint, the new treatment for it is you lack mindfulness and clear comprehension. When you are not ever mindful with the clear comprehension, you cannot restrain your senses. When you are not sensitive, you cannot see. Then the new treatment for the lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension is you lack yoniso manasikara. Means you have unwise attention or consideration. E yoniso manasikara. And the new treatment for this unwise attention, the lack of wise attention, is you lack faith in the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. And the lack of faith, the new treatment is due to you never listen to the true Dhamma. And the new treatment for this is not associating with good Dhamma friends or spiritual friends. Note, not associating with good Dhamma friends and spiritual friend or Kayamita is the starting new treatment to the wrong path that finally end up with ignorance leading to heedlessness. That's how the ignorance cycle comes about. So not having Dhamma friends, not associating with Dhamma friends is the cause of your lack of Dhamma understanding, lack of faith in the Triple Gem, not having wisdom, not having mindfulness and clear comprehension, unrestrained your senses, the three way of bad conduct or wrong conduct, and the five mental hindrances keep on arising. And finally, it strengthens your ignorance, avijja. So this ignorance sequence, you must be aware. You must awaken to it. You must not fall for it. Otherwise, you cannot come out of it. So to come out of it, you have to reverse all this. So the reversing of all this is what the enlightenment sequence is all about. So the enlightenment sequence, I think I will leave it to the next session to do the sharing so that we can have time for the next Tuesday class. You can go back and read up the enlightenment sequence on your own so that next Tuesday when we share, you will have better understanding. So this Avijja Sutta, I really accidentally bump upon it. Just before they want me to give a synopsis of the website. So I was thinking what to write for the website. Then this one came out. Then I recall why I developed the grouping as my Kayamita, and all these fall into place. And I also knew Kayamita is one of the prerequisites for enlightenment. That's why I started off with that concept of having true Kayamita ship. And you read our website, the objective, everything is very clearly spelled out there. Then the attributes of Kayamita and all the important understanding, they are all there. So you can go through. So the first section of the brotherteo.com, our website, is about us. You can read a lot of things, how we started and all the history. Then after that, we have our activity. Then we have our, we call it the Dhamma material. Repository of Dhamma wealth, Dhamma material. Now that one is very beautiful. All our publication, our books, our video, our audio, all the files are there. All the sharing are there. The important teachings and sharing over the years. You can have it there. Then how to contact us and all those things, they are all there. So you can read through. So okay, with that, maybe we will end today's sharing. It's almost 10:01, so that we can have our second session, which is reporting of meditation and question and answer.
Hello, hi Brother Teo, hi Krishna, and hi everybody there. I'm following the one that Ching Hao normally send up the next day.
I know.
That is shorter and very
concise.
I think I appreciate all the learning.
Oh,
thank you very much, Brother Teo.
Sadhu. Also rejoice with your wholesomeness.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of growth lah. From
the
time of beginning to now. And of course, the first time you asked me, I say, there's no you. And I say, what are you talking about? I say, I'm very much here.
That time you can't understand, yes. Yeah.
Like, the non-self is still something I am still learning. But of course, I think I've learned and benefit quite a bit on
this. Yes. By now, you should understand that all this so-called form and mind or the human being, which what we are, where we are born as human, is dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity. So this one is not the real you, understand or not? This one is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for you to come to this existential world. That's why this one, the form and mind, the human being, is subject to birth, old age, sickness, and death. And when it arises, this is a common reality, first noble truth reality. So do not be deluded by it, because that one is not you. That one go the way of nature, subject to law of karma, subject to birth and death. You will experience old age, sickness, and death. So when you have this understanding, then your mind need not suffer.
That's and pretty interesting, brother. Just now you were going through that the avijja and the illusion.
Yes.
And you see that men being the way we are, we have like and dislike, and that that is not the wisdom that we have. But having said that, I'm a very layman as a person. So of course we still have the like and dislike, and then where do we build that wisdom to understand the where is the to be neutral, right? Because obviously every day we go through, I like this, I don't like this.
Okay.
We are critical of this, we are not critical of this.
Okay. So now you want to understand how do we actually thread along. Means, like you say, how do you maintain a neutral mind? So the purpose of the Dhamma is not to maintain a neutral mind. The purpose of the Dhamma is to understand that these are mental hindrances, understand? Mental hindrance means what? Whenever you have a sense experience, like you see something very nice, or you smell good food, or a pretty form, or a nice car, or whatever, then you arise the sensual desire to own it, to have it. So that craving is actually a sensual desire. So when you have that desire at the moment of sense experience, what happened to you? You are lost in thought, preoccupied with that sensual desire. That's why you cannot be with the moment in awareness. You cannot understand what is going on. So that is craving, sensual craving, positive craving. It pulls you away. So when it pulls you away, your mind cannot be at peace. It is no longer in the meditative state of inner awareness with inner peace. So you must have the sensitivity of mind, the mindfulness to see this. When the mind is preoccupied with the like and dislike, it lost itself. It becomes heedless. And these are mental hindrances. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. So you are not at peace. Then, of course, human being is like that. Sensual desire is something people desire, isn't it? Like having nice food, good car, and all those things. Or pretty form and all those things. You say, that is life, that is joy, understand? You want to have them. So to you, it's normal. So how do you find a balance? The question is not really find a balance. It's the understanding. The Buddha said, you can have good food, you can have good life, you can own things, but do not be deluded by it, understand? Means don't attach, don't cling, don't crave. When there is condition for it to arise, let it manifest. Then use it, because you have the condition, you have the means, you can have, but don't attach. Means what? If condition cease to be the good food no more, or there is no condition to have, do not be miserable. That is the wisdom. Means you can have, but you don't attach. You maintain awareness, mindfulness. You can eat them, you can experience them, but you don't go and allow your thought to proliferate and go everywhere and create the daydreaming and the heedless thinking. Then go and fantasize and all those things until the last, the craving, the desire all come in. And that is really heedless living. Because you're supposed to be sensitive, to be mindful, to be aware. You can have good food, good life, good condition, no problem. Drive new car, beautiful car, no problem. That's why my daughter bought the dream car. I say, go ahead. As long as you have the means, you can afford it, you have the condition to have. So what?
how do we see like no passion? No, then we define passion is a burning desire that haunts you. So because of the passion, you
no. Passion
is different.
Kehun, no. Passion, the word, you have to be careful. Passion has a good meaning, but there is also a negative aspect to it. That's why when we talk about we have that passion to become successful, to become famous, that one can drive you. That one is one of the enlightenment factor, actually, passion. So that one can actually help people to achieve things, to realize things. But I believe what you are referring to is you have that type of passion for that materialistic thing, and also related to the emotion one, right? The lust and all those things. So if you are referring to that type of passion, then passion is being used in a negative manner. So passion can actually drive you to be diligent, to develop the faith. It's just
passion
like
passion and craving is different, eh?
No. It depends on how you define the word passion. Because the English word passion can go either way. Understand? Huh? When you are very passionate, like you are infatuated with somebody, you become very passionate with that person. Actually, it's the lust. Understand? Huh? It's the craving, it's the desire. But when you develop passion to do the thing you like to do in life, like your hobby, or like you want to help people plant the garden, then do the thing like you have passion. Maybe develop good music, to play musical instrument. That passion can drive you to practice, to cultivate, to become skillful, to become somebody very outstanding, unique. So that aspect of passion is actually one of the 37 factors of enlightenment. The four bases of success, one of them is that passion. So you must have passion, actually. But it depends on the English word that you use. For your case, you have to explain to me what meaning is your word passion, because you want to balance between passion and what?
To me, passion is a burning desire to achieve a certain goal. So of course...
Okay, you wait. My doctor got something to share.
Okay.
I think my deciding factor whether passion is healthy for you or not is whether it comes at the expense of harming others. I think if you are passionate about something until you bulldoze and you harm and hurt others in the process, then you're not trying to materialize your goals and objectives amicably in a harmonious manner. So in that way, you're causing more harm than good. Then that kind of passion has probably gone overboard. So I think when I try to strike a balance between, when you say strike a balance, I think the reason it is not actually striking a balance is because it's actually it's more of a appreciation for the good as well as the bad in life, and being able to live in peace with everything that comes. That is actually very easily attainable when we can understand why we get agitated or disappointed in the first place. That's why when it comes to avoiding evil, we have the three evil roots. When we talk about self-delusion, we actually have all the egocentricity, selfishness, self-righteousness, fear, worry, anxiety, my dad's favorite. You have boredom, you have loneliness, embarrassment, discrimination, denial, non-acceptance of reality. These are all something we created in our own personality through either society norms or some habits that were inculcated during childhood or during upbringing.
Yeah, very good.
We created all these for ourselves. So we feel that we have to like something because it enforces our identity. If we start to not like it, I have an identity crisis. This is not me.
Yeah.
I'm going back on something that I believe. So I start to have the other form of evil root, which is part of the hatred, where you have resentment, anger, aversion, dislike, spite, enmity, disappointment. When you're disappointed with yourself, with others, with how things turn out, you start to blame, you have cruelty, you get remorse, you get regret, you get grief, you get lamentation. These are all very unhealthy mind states.
Yeah.
That's why they are the three poisons that the
Buddhism
put up. Greed, I think we're very knowledgeable about that. Like envy, jealousy, lust, deception, dishonesty, possessiveness, covetousness, wanting to win all the time at the expense of others.
Yeah.
So if we understand what is unhealthy, we can actually groom what is healthy. Actually, all our habits are groomed. Our identity is created step by step. It's not something that is permanent or unable to change. It's not something innate to us. Contrary to what we believe, we think we are who we are because we can't help it. It is actually slowly groomed from our choices in life. People who don't like certain things can be trained to like certain things, and people who, since young, have introduced to something people everybody else thinks is good, but you introduce it as bad, that is the way he will believe it when he grows up. So all these are actually behavioral training. So the human being identity is a very fleeting and fluid thing. We thought it was permanent, but it's changing day by day, moment by moment. Today I'm vegetarian, tomorrow I'm no longer vegetarian. These are the things that can flip overnight, and we still think we are the same person. So the concept of identity was something I had to unravel as I study Buddhism. I hope this helps.
Sadhu, very good. In fact,
thank you.
Yeah, her explanation is very good, better than what I can do. Because she can use that she got a note later on, she can share her own.
She used psychology behind this.
No, not psychology. She blend Buddhism, the Dhamma, into life. A lot of people teach it as motivational thing, but he used the Dhamma to explain things, which is very beautiful. So, like you say, how can you actually, you use the word what?
Passion.
No. He like trap a middle way or what?
Balance.
The balance. So, it's about the Dhamma. When you understand the Dhamma, when things has the evil roots, if you have them, it become mental hindrance, conditioned by ignorance, avijja, and all those things. So all those mental states, if you put them in, there is no longer the pure passion. The pure passion is like, you like that type of thing, that art, that skill, but you don't go and harm people. You cannot tell people, say, I have this passion to steal, to murder, to harm, and this is not passion, this is cruelty. But if you say you have this passion to become very good at your study, successful in your career, but of course there are ethical part to it. That's why I told my daughter, you have to look at the law of karma. The law of karma is very important. Even I used to tell people, when you come to investment, it's not about your skill and your understanding of what stock market is. It also has a lot to do with your karma, your dana parami. You don't have dana parami, wealth will not come to you. Money will not come to you. That's why when I have this understanding, I have the complete understanding, and I can help people, and I can do it the correct way. Means we have to follow Dhamma way. The Dhamma way is Noble Eightfold Path. So everything centered on Noble Eightfold Path. So like you say, the mental hindrance, like and dislike, the craving, the passion, and all those things, you have to use the Noble Eightfold Path to guide you. You have to apply the Dhamma. You have to look at it from the morality point of view, means law of karma. I think my daughter brought out a very good point. Well, that one not easy to explain to people. So, Kehun, with that, hopefully it can let you understand better. Yeah, one more thing. My daughter wants to explain.
Sorry, excuse me. I want to know about the word chanda.
Chanda. Oh, Selena has a question about skanda.
No. Chanda, I think. Not skanda. Is it chanda or skanda?
Chanda. C-H-A-N-D-A.
Oh, chanda.
Chanda, yeah. Passion.
Passion. Passion.
The four bases of success. You must have passion. Chanda. Passion means you must have that faith and the virya to do it, because this is what you are very passionate about, like to help people to grow, to help release suffering, to do all those good things, to be skillful in certain aspect of things, to create, to be very creative in your approach to music, to art and all those things. This is passion. So to be successful in anything, you must have the passion. Like stock market investment, to be successful, your career, to become a lawyer, engineer, you must have the passion for that subject matter. Then, of course, it ties in with the Dhamma. So, Selena, hopefully I answer you. Then my daughter want to share something. Don't mind, let her share. Okay.
Because my dad mentioned karma. Actually, karma helps to understand or helps bring about that our decision as to whether we can make peace with the situation or not, the understanding of karma. So what really helped me, I found, was when something unpleasant that happens, like if someone if something was unjustly done and I was at the short end of the stick. So I either suffer a loss, I had to get something fixed, or like the new car, I got an accident, or something like that, right? So or it could be just someone unfairly accused me or something, or it could be a boss or something at work. So if something like that happens in such situations, normally we find it very hard to accept karma. Then we say it's not right to let this prolong. We have to fix it, otherwise they do it to somebody else. This is all the self-righteousness that tend to come in at the beginning when I started to try and evaluate how I can apply the Dharma. Then I realized when I understand karma, whatever that they dish out, they dish out to their karma, their track record, they will have to suffer back that kind of abuse from somebody else. It might not be me. They will suffer that in the future. They sow their seeds and they have to reap the fruits when it comes. So how do I respond? Knowing this, that's how karma works. When something unfair happens to me, I would choose to respond with kindness, because when I get into trouble, I would want people to help me. Yeah, I would want kindness to be felt when I'm in my most vulnerable situation. So when I know that whatever I do to others, when I shout at others, I stand to be shouted back sometime in the future, you will realize there is no need to retaliate. There's no meaning in retaliating. You're trying to poison yourself when you try to retaliate. So when you strike, then you will be good out of understanding.
Yeah.
You won't be good out of being
foolish. Yeah. You reap what you sow. That one very important. So she has a very good point. So when you have the Dhamma understanding, the law of karma, you reap what you sow. Whatever you do to people come back to you. So the understanding will unfold. Then she will look at it differently. No need to get angry, even though you are on the shorter end of the stick, or short change or whatever, or people cheat you, take advantage of you or abuse you or whatever. Yeah. He is the way he is. Deluded, selfish, he will do all those things. And karma wise, he reap what he sow. In future somebody else will do it back to him. And he will have to face that karmic friction or consequence. Then, like my daughter come to understand, we have to follow the Dhamma way, resolve things amicably so that nobody gets hurt. then follow Noble Eightfold Path, so that we speak of kindness, gentleness, pleasantness, so that in future, when we need people who communicate with us in such nice manner, we will have the fruition of it, the result. Because this is your coming inheritance. By nature, you are kind, you are gentle, you are pleasant, you are sincere, you have love, you have compassion, you help people. And this is what will come back to you as your inheritance. This is the law of karma. You reap what you sow. That's why when you have the Dhamma understanding, you become different. You can mitigate all this. You can overcome all this. You can actually develop until it becomes so meaningful, so beautiful. And people cannot understand you. And people may think, "Ayo, how come you like that? People step over your toe, take up until you do all this. You can still tolerate because they can't understand." That's why there were many occasions in the past. I experienced it in real life. There were a few occasions, I remember. I was at the supermarket buying something. Then somebody, I think a youngster, he actually was in a hurry. He rushed. Then he banged into me, you know. Oh. And at that time, my age was already 30-something, 40 years old. That guy was in the youth, you know, 18, 19 or 20 years, bang into me, quite hard now. Then the way I respond was very funny, you know. I say sorry. Then he looked at me, you know. He was a Malay guy, you know. And that boy, he turned around and talked to me, you know. He said, "Uncle, I am the one who should say sorry." But instead, "You say sorry to me, you know." I say, "Don't worry, because you don't intend it." Yeah. I say, I don't have the intention. Then he spoke to the friend, the Malay friend. He said, "Tadi, that uncle, very good." You know? I say, "I langgar sama dia. Dia tak marah lagi, minta maaf, sorry." So I think to their religion, they also like to ask for forgiveness. They have this teaching inside their religion. Asking for forgiveness is something that is very important and very noble to them. They always seek ma'a. Then certain, I think, religious festival, they got this ma'a batin and the north. Zahir batin, asking for forgiveness and all things. So these are good traditions. These are people who have the teaching and the understanding. So you can do that, you become different. That's why when you have the Dhamma, the ego is not there, the humility is there. You do not react and wants to become angry, violent, emotional. You cannot. When the Dhamma is there, whatever happens, you just have to accept the reality. Then you normally give people the benefit of the doubt so that you can avoid unnecessary situation because you don't know who you are against with. So if you react to it and get angry, you may end up meeting the wrong guy. Karmic wise, you have the past karmic conditioning, then you may end up in trouble for nothing. So all this is very good sharing today. So shall we rejoice? Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu. Okay, Kye Hun, come back to you before we end. We love you.
Thank you, Brother Teo.
Thank
you so much.
Have a final say. Yeah, Kye Hun, you can speak.
Oh, no. I think I got most of the questions answered. Thank you so much.
That's why you must share. I let you conclude. Summary or conclude what you have learned. So now you know how to tread the middle path.
Of course, the general perception was when I talk about passion, I wasn't talking about what the nature of the job is not hurting anybody. What the nature of the job is always building. What the nature of my job is building. and the
try to help people, huh?
But it's not about me. But sometimes you, when of course the first time when I went to the retreat in Cameron Highland, and then there was that sharing that you say about the issue of ourselves. We look very much into ourselves.
Yeah, the ego, the personality,
that anatta or the non-self.
Yeah, non-self nature.
That was pretty difficult for me to
understand, but difficult to comprehend. Yes.
In the area of psychology, we also talk about that self identity, which became the ego behind it.
Yeah, personality. Yeah.
But I wanted to see how we apply the sila, bhavana, and the meditation on the daily life. But of course, most of the time when you say meditation, it is good when I go Cameron Highland and then I got nothing in my mind except to stay there.
That was the most beautiful part of your life,
But that is really you take you off from the real world,
and then
you are just there.
You are able to experience peace.
So
tranquility.
Correct. And then you
stress.
It's very guided by you. And then it's also guided by other Kayamitas, and you see their own sharing, but in between all time, and you hear their story on their journey of their life. There's a lot of sharing in that way.
But
when I'm talking about my passion, I'm looking at the young people's passion of they want passion in the right way. Like, just say I have a student who wants passion in doing medicine, which is not wrong. But in the interim of doing medicine, she has she cannot handle the stress, so she developed mental disease. The kind of passion also comes in where we see in a different dimension, not about hurting other people, but hurting themselves in that journey, you see. So sometimes we talk about not wanting so much, so you want less so that you are also not worthy anymore. But in the modern world, we actually want a lot of things. Again, it's not wrong, but yet in that pursuit of wanting something, sometimes we do hurt ourselves, like promotion or stress level. It may not be hurting another person, but hurting themselves due to lack of sleep. No. So we always tell them, do you need to be that 100%? Can you take 80%? So I'm also listening to the Dharma point of view on how we could coach. And I think I've learned a lot. The first time when Brother Sui An tell me, Sen Lao Bing Si, and then associating with the people you don't like, say, how true. Looking what you learn.
Very
good. The five aggregates was something very challenging for me when you explained. But I think that you explained very well when I was in Cameron Highland, and you say that sometimes it's just that thought moment and we tend to react because it's habitual tendency. So it's that wisdom of being able to catch that.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm also learning, to catch that moment, because sometimes being fast, I will react very quickly, and it's up already. I'm also learning a lot from your daughter, and I think she's very wise as a very young girl. Thank you very much. She has shared a very good point of view, but sometimes it's not about hurting other people, but in the end, it's hurting ourselves in the interim of chasing something that maybe we don't have it. I'm not sure.
That part, maybe I will help you a bit, then we end.
Thank you.
Regarding the medicine, the student that want to study medicine, then you say ending up full of stress, cannot handle and all those things. So a lot of students break down. That's why I say when you understand the Dhamma, you can help them. You see, when you want to study something, like my case was engineering, because I have passion, and since birth I know that is the profession I like, then you must find out about that profession and check whether you really have the passion or not. When you have the passion, you can take the stress, you can sacrifice, you can really work toward it, because that is what you want. So you can actually help explain to all these people. When you have developed the passion for it, and this is really something very noble that you want to do, then you can sacrifice. You can actually do it. But for those who do it wrongly, like you say, until not enough sleep, until they become so stressful, they end up torturing themselves, making themselves miserable, that one is getting out of control already. Means he doesn't, he or she doesn't know how to handle it. So as a career teacher or guardian, it is your role to advise them. You tell them, like you said, not everybody can actually do certain profession, because unless you have the passion and you are willing to sacrifice and willing to really diligently work towards it, because that is what you believe in, that is the noble intention, and then it can happen. Otherwise, change course, do another course which is more tolerable, easier. Then let them understand more about career path. Not necessarily you must become a doctor to make big money. If the ulterior motive is to make big money, not about that profession, then in Australia, I was told, to study medicine before you enter first year, they interview you. They want to find out whether you really sincere or not, have the passion to become a medical doctor. If your passion is not there, you are motivated by money and that thing, they don't want you. So that these are the few things that you can actually help incorporate into your counseling service to help these young people. Well, young people, they don't have the exposure, the experience. So it would be good if they can talk to people who has become doctor for many years. Then they can tell you about the pro and con, and because they have good experience and exposure. Like last time my daughter, before she studied, I took her, I said, any profession you want, I take you. I got a lot of classmates, we can go and find out. That's how they find out. Then they make their own choice. So in life, it's about understanding, then make the right choice, the appropriate choice. Okay, Kehun, so that
thank
one
you.
Is for
sadhu,
you.
Sadhu, Brother Tia, thank you. Sadhu.
Let us rejoice, then we end. Sadhu. 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 Today, I like the sharing. This is good sharing. That's why more people should speak out, share. Then we evolve the understanding so that more and more people can benefit. Thank you so much, Kevin and Selena.
Thank you, Brother Tio.
Thank you to all, equally my daughter and
yes,
all
your daughter, yes. Wise girl.
Yeah, all this possible. So we rejoice. Okay.